Motopod, proudly supported by Roadskin, a UK label specializing in protective outerwear for motorcyclists. Modern biker clothing that you can wear all day long and engineered to save your skin. For the road, for life, visit roadskin.co.uk.
Welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 795, recording this on Friday the 31st of January. And following on from the Silverstone Moto3 interviews that I released a week or so ago, now it's the turn of the Moto2 riders. Now, as I said last time, but just to recap, these are rather late coming out. But nevertheless, I hope the content's good and serves as a useful lead-in to the upcoming 2025 season, which is now just about 1 month away before we all assemble in Thailand. Listening back to these, which of course were recorded back in August of 2024, just after the summer break, it's interesting to see how the second half of the season went for the riders in question. Now, first up, we've got Senna Aegis. Senna, as you will recall, did some rides for the Markelf VDS squad back in 2023, but 24 was his first full season, and I think it's fair to say he, whilst maybe not bursting onto the scene, he certainly showed a lot of progress through the year. So it was interesting to talk to him at the halfway point at Silverstone. As you'll hear, Senna turned out to be quite a chatty, jovial young guy and someone with a really great mindset. I've got a lot of time for anybody that says pressure is a privilege. Just to recap on how Silverstone went for Senna, he actually finished the race in a very creditable 10th place, and people will remember that stunning ride that he had at home at Phillip Island where he finished third. He finished up 18th in the championship and I think was by far and away the better of the two riders in that team up against Darren Binder last year. Following on from Senna, we have Sergio Garcia. As always, very quiet and considered, almost quite shy really. 2024 was a season of two very distinct halves for Sergio. He was outstanding in the first half, grabbing a couple of wins. The summer break and coming back to Silverstone was when all of the talk around the Pramac Yamaha ride was starting to gather some momentum, although of course the Pramac Yamaha deal was not secured at that point. A lot of people put his downturn in form to the speculation around his future, although if you listen to what he says about it when I asked him at Silverstone, it didn't appear that that was the case. But obviously there was a lot of politics swirling around it, and ultimately his teammate and eventual Moto2 world champion Ayagura would be the one out of the two that got the move up to MotoGP. If I'm recalling this correctly, Sergio had a pretty disastrous qualifying on the Saturday, but then on the Sunday actually rode a really good race to finish in fourth place. And ultimately, although he was leading the championship narrowly by 6 points when we were at Silverstone, he would ultimately go on and finish fourth in the championship. So it was a somewhat disappointing second half of the season. But nevertheless, much will be expected of Sergio, who stays on in that same squad for this coming season. One quick footnote is that I'm sorry that there was a telephone call. I think it was Sergio's phone rather than my own that went off during the interview. So hopefully it won't make you jump. I have edited as much of it out as I can without ruining the question. So apologies for that if it catches you out. This is obviously going to be a very important season for Sergio Garcia. He will head into the season as one of the championship favourites, without a doubt. And I still hold firm on my belief that whilst it's understandable that Miller and Oliveira got the call to the Pramac Yamaha squad as Yamaha looked to rebuild and rely on experience, for sure they're going to need to turn that team towards having some young rookies to feed up into the works team. So we'll be keeping a very close eye on Sergio this coming season. And then to finish up, we have Tony Arbolino. Again, Tony, a rider that had a very strange 2024, but as you'll hear from the chat that I had with him, it appears that he was just really searching for setup and a better understanding of the Pirelli tyres throughout the season. Now, at the time that I spoke to him, things had not been going terribly well. Things did get much better in the second half of the season, it must be said. And Tony now actually resides in the what I think we can call the Yamaha Junior squad in Moto2, alongside Ethan Guevara. So again, it will be interesting to see how Tony and Ethan Guevara, for that matter, get on this season in what looks to be a very well-supported team. And he will obviously be looking at MotoGP in the very near future in terms of where his aspirations will lie. Again, I'm sure with an eye on potentially the Pramac Yamaha squad, depending on how things go. So I think that's all I need to say. This episode is going to come out just before Jim and I catch up for our resumption of normal activities, talking about launch season, KTM, and looking forward to the start of World Superbikes, which happens at the end of February, and then, of course, shortly thereafter, followed by MotoGP getting going again. I'm possibly going to put one more of the Silverstone specials out. I bumped into various people in the paddock during the course of the weekend, plus some of the media debriefs which I recorded from the MotoGP riders are possibly worthy of inclusion, so I'm going to work on that a little bit over the next couple of days. And if we can put that into some form of a show that's good to listen to, then that's what we'll aim to do. Anyway, for now, let's go over to the MotoGP riders, starting off with Senna Aegis. First interview of the day here at Silverstone. I'm sat with Senna Aegis, Liqui Moly Husqvarna Intact GP Moto2 rider. Senna, a very warm welcome onto Motopod for the first time. Huge pleasure to speak with you. To start off with, can you tell us a little bit about your younger years? I saw you, like so many of your compatriots, were born in New South Wales in Australia, started off in motocross. But what's the background? What's the connection with two-wheeled motorsport? Is it a family thing or it just happened?
Yeah, like you said, growing up in New South Wales, back home in Australia, a long way away from where we are now. And for motocross, dirt bikes, and started that way. Started from my brother, but then obviously from my brother started from my dad. My dad didn't allow to pursue his passion for two wheels as a young age, was stopped by his parents. So I think once he was old enough to, he's obviously an adult, to make his own decisions, he started doing it just for fun anyway, but always obviously had a very big interest in it growing up. And I think that shows in also my name. I think my dad was quite an inspiration to become something himself, but it didn't happen. So he took my brother racing, and then obviously when I came around, you see what your siblings are doing and want to do that. So I was definitely just always nagging at what my brother was doing and wanted to try. Even I got like photos of me in a nappy on a pedal bike, me trying to follow him around the house on that when he's riding. So I followed my brother. He came to Europe in 2010, 2011 when it was Moto3 was 125s and Spanish Championship, did a few wildcard appearances, and then he ended up having a couple injuries, and I think reality set in of where he was at and where our family was at. Unfortunately, like, my family couldn't stay in Europe with him at full time, so he got sent here at 15, 16 years old. So I think at that time my parents were quite new to the sport, and he started having a couple injuries, and I think they made the decision to bring him home, and he was happy to start earning his money and working, and then he is now quite successful in his business. So no, I obviously, dad, after his experience with my brother, took me racing in a bit of a different approach. We kind of looked at the fundamentals, and as we progressed it and didn't like go overseas, say straight away on dirt bikes. We obviously raced motocross for many years at home. Yeah, I never got to win an Australian motocross championship, but second a couple times. And then race a lot of motocross and flat track in my early years, and just tried a road bike out of something like, okay, my brother did it, but I was so set on dirt bikes. Like, I was so set on being a motocross rider and everything like that. But I had a sudden change when I tried flat track, and I was winging both there for a while. And as I was trying to do two disciplines, tried a NSF 100 road bike in, say, 2016-ish, just something quite fun and another bit of a light switch moment. I really enjoyed that. As a kid, when I was so stuck on doing something, I tried something new, and if I picked it up quite quickly, I was like all of a sudden obsessed with it. And at that age, I wasn't told to, like, okay, it's not what you're focusing on. It's like now, if I try a new hobby, I'm not gonna change to trials because I like it in at home, you know what I mean? But at that age, I was like, oh, okay, I was racing actually even like a little bit of go-karts at the time. I was like, okay, but I want to race go-karts too. And I had like so many things going on, but I was quite set on learning the love for road racing, because obviously it's not like a dirt bike where you start and okay, you get faster, but it always kind of stays the same way. Road racing, you start so foreign, like you're all the way time upright, and then the first time you get your knee down and you start leaning and trusting the physics of the sport, and I fell in love with it. So dirt bikes for me quite wrapped up quite quickly at that point. And then it was, like you said, a two-year turnaround, and then I found myself in the Asia Talent Cup 2 years later in 2018.
So. Well, on that point, I was doing a bit of research, obviously, to get prepared for this, and fair to say you burst onto the European scene in 2023, but as you say, you'd competed previously in Asia Talent Cup, and then Junior GP in Moto3. So, I mean, you've kind of explained a little bit, but tell us a little bit about the move to Europe, and been a whirlwind, I guess, ever since that time. How was the transition from racing and living at home to being on the road?
Yeah, big transition from, say, Asia Talent Cup to Europe. Ended up coming home in 2019. And then went back in 2020 over to Europe. So yeah, massive transition. It was a pack up job pretty much. Me and dad moved to Europe in COVID in 2020. So that was there was no chance of going home or family coming over. So we separated and set off in Moto3 Junior World Championship. big culture shock. I lived in a different country. I don't speak the language. New category, everything, in a not an easy category, as everyone would know. So, massive shock. Yeah, it was just probably something that I needed, honestly. When you move over from another country, you're never going to be in comfort straight away. So I think I matured from that experience and it set me up well.
So you did a couple of substitute rides, I guess we call them, for Mark VDS and then for this team, Intact GP. Yeah. This is your first full-time year in Moto2. Yeah. So tell us about the year so far from your point of view. Happy, satisfied, frustrated, progress? I mean, where do you see yourself?
I think I'm riding the normal wave of a rookie season. New experiences, you find success and then you're struggling, and then I'm still searching for that consistency. But also with the technical specs of the bike this year, you can see that everyone's looking for some stability. It's no longer the category that everyone knows the bike for from 10 years. So there's quite a lot of new things for everyone to face. And I think like my last couple races, if you can see that there's like with the tires and stuff, it's not tricky to manage. So no, I'm honestly quite happy. We're getting better. I'm just making steps mentally. Like, I'm not always going to be where I want to be, and I think when who can be the most mentally stable and keep chipping away at it, it comes and it's rewarding. So no, I'm quite happy to be in the position I am, and there's no complaints.
Do you have as seems to be more and more the case nowadays, in order to sort of help manage the pressure, because obviously you're in world championship, so you're going to be putting pressure on yourself, do you have a kind of a particular approach to managing the pressures and the stresses of the job?
Honestly, I look at pressure as a privilege. Like, if you're under pressure, then it's the dream that I've always wanted to be here. So at one stage, it's nice because when you deliver something, you're rewarding your crew and everything, and team owners and things like this, and everyone's happy and the vibe's good. And then it's the opposite. Like, I know I'm in a good situation where when things are a little bit tougher, I'm fully supported to get to where we deserve. So no, I look at it as in a super positive way. And at the end of the day, bike racing's always been bike racing on any level. So when you line up on Sunday, it's just like anything I've always knew, is racing against my competitors. So no, if you take a step back and look at it, it's a massive thing what we're doing, but I think all of us honestly feel like we're just racing each other at all times. So nothing's really changed for me. And it's only when I look back at it and go home and watch if I have a good result and watch the race back, you obviously smile and enjoy. So no, just keep it this way.
Great attitude, yeah. Have you ever turned a lap at Silverstone before?
No, I drove a car here like 2 months ago. It was my birthday. And me and Dad rented some Civic Type R's and burn around together. So
nice.
No, I just honestly was like not really to learn the track, but I know where it goes in my head, but I can only say after tomorrow what it's like on a bike.
Yeah, I was going to say, so thoughts ahead of first practice tomorrow. I mean, how do you approach those initial laps? I mean, have you got an idea with regards to setup, or will you lean on the team a little bit?
I think it's best to, like, we've had the bike's come quite a long way in the last two races. Results have got better, so I think it'd be silly to veer off our last, our current base pretty much. Now I got to go do some homework with the team and just watch some onboards and stuff like that to understand more or less where to put the bike on the first couple laps. And no, honestly, just keep positive and learn as I go. And it's unrealistic to think you're going to be fully up to speed after the first session on Friday. I'd love to be. So just keep calm on Friday and obviously just try and arrive to where we want on Sunday, which is proven that if you keep calm, it can happen. So.
Is there any sort of comparison with another track? I mean, obviously Silverstone's a long track and it's a very fast track, some pretty high speed corners. Can you take, Barcelona, is there any data that's useful in terms of a starting setup?
Yeah, it's true. The long corners, you can maybe compare. Yeah, honestly, maybe some stuff from Germany, long corners, a lot of slip on angles. So yeah, and I think we can figure out something quite good. But I think Silverstone's so long, but there's also two kind of racetracks in one, like you just mentioned, Barcelona.
Yeah.
But then we've got like two chicanes in this place in first and second gear. So no, let's see. It's super interesting. It looks super cool on TV. So yeah, I'm excited.
Talk to me a little bit about Pirelli tyres. I mean, obviously you didn't have a huge amount of experience, I guess, running on the Dunlops last year when you just did the few rides. But, I mean, how are you finding the tyres? Is it a tricky transition, or are you enjoying the extra grip from this construction and this new compound?
Yeah, well, I raced 2 years in Spanish Championship Moto2 with Dunlop. So okay. I did, obviously, the 8 or 9 fill-ins and then 2 years on Dunlop. So I was pretty well conditioned to the Dunlop. But honestly, when we first put them in and all the bikes weren't ready, like weren't set up around it, it did feel a bit strange. No one could really, including me obviously, couldn't really get the potential out of the Pirelli. But I think the bikes have come so far, I forget what the Dunlop felt like, for example. So it's right. Now the new normal. So yeah. I think now we're really starting to understand how to get the maximum out of it, and it's a new window in Moto2 and the potential what the rider can do with the bike. So no, it's the new normal and it's going in the right way. It feels just, obviously there's an element of safety, like different conditions. It seems the new tyres help just be a little bit more stable. The Dunlop was quite tricky if it got cold cold or if it got hot. So no, I'm feeling good.
Interesting. I'm 52 years old, so I go back a while watching motorbike racing. But Australia has produced some of the greatest races in MotoGP and World Superbikes over the years. And for a young Australian rider, is that a source of inspiration? I mean, what do you know about the likes of Wayne Gardner and Mick Doohan and Troy Corsa and so on? Are you sort of interested, invested in the history of the sport, or just always looking forward?
No, for sure. You look at the history of the sport. Yeah. Honestly, Casey's probably the ultimate rider in my mind, not just because of his two world championships, but luckily enough, got to spend a little bit of time with Casey in the last year or two, and I just really am interested in his character, honestly, just how he goes about life, and honestly, any passion that he's into, I can understand why he's a two-time world champion, not just because I went fishing with him, for example, and how he's so detailed in his hobbies. I could tell that when he was racing, I couldn't imagine what he was like to work with, you know what I mean? So I'm really interested in that. And then obviously Jack is still here and he's the current, obviously, Australian MotoGP and everyone's looking up to. But then the history with Doohan and even further back than that, then with Corsa and things like this. So of course, feels like if I make it there, I have big boots to fill if I ever get the chance to go to MotoGP and try and understand and copy what I'd love to do what Casey done. Obviously, every kid wants to do that. So it's few and far between. There's obviously a lot more different nationalities in MotoGP and, say, the championship and things like this. And in Europe, then there is the European guys. But I think everyone can look at the Aussies saying that they're all gems pretty much. It's not been, I don't think there's an Aussie that's not cool. So
yeah,
that's not had success. So no, it's inspiration for me for sure.
Great. And final question, because I know he's obviously on the clock here. You've got Joel Kelso, you've got Jacob Ralston here, you mentioned Jack Miller. Do you guys sort of hang out? I mean, do you have like a little Aussie contingent? Is that a comfort to you? Is that something you like? Or do you prefer to kind of just do your own thing and concentrate a bit more on yourself?
I'm chill. We all get along fine. So I don't see much of them at all. Honestly, there's so many people in the paddock, but you're so to yourself with your job that it's kind of a bit hard, and I think we all live in different locations as well, so it's not like after the weekend we bump to each other. Only if we ever go, everyone trains and there's a few tracks that you'll run into each other at, but no, all good than that. I like to see like Jacob and Joel are doing well, Jack at KTM and stuff like this, so it's nice to support them, and yeah, it's nice to have other Aussies to bump into.
Yeah, well, so we wish you the best of luck for the weekend ahead. I'm sure you're going to do well. We've been having a cracking year so far, and wish you the best of luck and enjoy Silverstone. At least you got sunshine in as well, which is something that's slightly novel compared to recent years. So best of luck for the weekend.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks.
Bye.
Sergio Garcia, MT Helmets MSI Moto2 rider. Sergio, we spoke in Qatar last year, so it's great to have a chance to talk to you again. I mean, Qatar was not so long ago, but a lot's happened since then. So when we spoke last year, you might remember, you probably don't, but I complimented you on what I thought was a very impressive switch from Moto3 into Moto2, with last year being your rookie season. Clearly, you've built on that experience massively this year. You've had the summer break just finishing now to think about everything, so please tell me how you're feeling as we now go into this second part of the season.
Yeah, I think the feeling this year, it's really good. Also, the team, I changed also the bike. It's everything different for me because I'm working with another kind of people, no? And everything changed. But I think we did a really good pre-season, and that's one of the points, no, of the results of this year, because we worked really hard during the test, and now we had a really good potential.
From my understanding, and you can tell me if this is not correct, but I understood that the decision that the team made to switch over to the Boschiscuro chassis was made quite late in the day. I'm not sure if that's true, if you were expecting to be on the Kalex this year and then the decision was made to go over to the new bike. So anyway, what was your reaction when you first learned that you would be riding on the Boschiscuro chassis in 2024? Was it a positive reaction for you, or you were a little bit worried at that moment?
Yeah, it was a difficult decision because we decided that in Qatar of last year. And yeah, the team said to us, to Ogura and to me, if we wanted to do the change, and was in our hands, no, the decision.
So you knew.
And yeah, okay. And I spoke with I in that moment, and he said, yeah, why not? And yeah, I was thinking the same, no? Both riders rode last year with the Kalex, and why not to change, no? And also seeing the last part of the season that Fermín Aldeguer was doing. We thought that was a good opportunity for us to have a different bike from the big part of the all the grid.
The rest of the grid, yeah. And what was your first impression after the initial test when you tried the Pusky Scooter for the first time? I mean, clearly, it looks like a bike which you tried it with different lines a little bit, or not so much for you?
Not so much difference. I was expecting more, like not better, but more different kinds of ride with the two chassis. But also we tried the new Bosco Scuro with the new tires and everything changed, no? I think we don't have the good comparison because we didn't ride the same bike with the same tires. As you said, it is a different, but not big difference.
And were you happy that that was the case, that you didn't have a big kind of mountain to climb understanding a new behaviour of a new bike? Was it a relief in a way for you to have something that felt quite similar to the Calais?
Yeah, because the way to work was a little bit similar, and it's easier for us because we change everything and it's easier to understand if the bikes are doing similar reactions, no? More or less.
Now, we should remind the Motorpod listeners that the MT Helmets MSI team is the same team that you were on last year. Obviously, it was the Cito Pons Racing team. So, obviously, you feel very at home here, kind of part of the family, let's say. Is that part of the reason why you're having such a good year again this year, or is you just put it down to more experience?
No, I think everything is doing... I don't know how to explain, but yeah, here it's a different team. It's different ways to work, but yeah, I was feeling comfortable with the Cito Pons team. But here I think it's more like they trust more on me.
On your opinion?
Yeah, I think it's good team. Also, my team, my crew chief and my mechanics are the same as in Pons. And more or less only change the bosses, no?
Okay. But overall a very positive situation from what you
said. Yeah, I think also I cannot compare because I was in a Cito Pons team that was closing. It was the last year and everything.
Yeah.
It's not the same as the first year. Here is the first year of the team, and also the bosses are super excited to have a good result, and it's different points of view, no?
Yeah, there's a lot of energy, positive energy here at the moment, I guess.
When you start a new project, everybody is like pushing really hard to do it.
Especially when you're 1-2 in the championship.
Yeah.
So, you know, that leads very nicely. So you have a 5-point advantage at the moment over your teammate, Ayagura. What's your mindset, your process, let's say, for the coming races? Is it kind of continue to be on full attack, or do you try to make a little bit more of a strategy to
for
points?
For the moment, it's not the time to see the or to think on the championship. I think we have to think more in the races that we don't have something to win, no? And you have to think more in not to crash and to be always saving the points. But in the moments that we can attack, I will attack, and for the moment the target is to go to, for the win always, and if we have a bad day, save the more points if possible.
Yeah, and I must ask you about the Pirelli tyres. Obviously you only had one season on the Dunlops in Moto2, but are you a fan of the Pirelli tyre, the extra grip and maybe a bit more feel? Is that the case?
Yeah, it changed a lot. I think in the front they did a really good job. The Pirelli tyre was much better than the Dunlop, but it's more similar. It's true that in some kinds of races like Barcelona, German, it's difficult to understand because the drop from the first lap to the last one, it's too big, like 3-4 seconds per lap.
Is that mainly on the rear or the front as well?
Both, but more in the rear.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult to understand, but it makes a little bit more interesting the category for the spectators and also for us to understand the bikes and the settings of the bikes.
Yeah, I was talking with Sam Lowe's at Donington World Superbike a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying that with the old Dunlop tyres, you could kind of almost do 2 full races on those tyres and you would have no drop at all.
Yeah, it was different.
Two more things. You retired from the race here last year, and I was looking back at your results in Silverstone, and it hasn't been the kindest track to you over the years, but nevertheless, do you like Silverstone as a track? I mean, what's your feeling going into the weekend this weekend, particularly with the new tyres and lower lap times and so on?
Yeah, I like a lot. The circuit is the biggest now of the calendar.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was a nice track, but never I had a good results. But it's the same as Austin for me, because I like a lot the track, but never had good results. This year was one of my targets to be in a good position for Austin race. I could win, were my first points in that circuit.
Yeah.
And here in Silverstone is the same target.
It's a good omen. Yeah. Yeah.
Is to go for the win, because I think I had bad luck here a lot of times, and it's time to change it and to go for the win.
And finally then, Sergio, based on your performances, well, last year and definitely this year, there's obviously been some rumours going around about what might be happening next year. I'm not going to try and ask you a question about that, because that's not fair, and you wouldn't give me an answer anyway, quite correctly. But how do you manage that pressure, you know, that expectation, the, you know, the media scrutiny, asking questions, making rumours? I mean, is it a distraction to you, or can you turn that into a positive motivation in a way?
Yeah, for me, yes, because it's unexpected, no, that this year I had already offers from MotoGP teams, and for me it's super good. I think that it's because we are doing a really good job. We are making our job in a good way. And yeah, it's difficult for us always to respond to this kind of questions, because everybody is asking the same.
Who is going... I'm not asking the question.
No, no, no. No,
because I don't think
who is going to MotoGP? Also me, to everybody. But I said always the same. It's my dream is to be one day MotoGP rider, and if I had a good offer, I will go for it. But for the moment, I don't have nothing. Yeah, if it's possible this year, good. If not, we will try it next year.
For me, just for my opinion, based on, as I say, I'm a big fan of you. I'm always saying so on the podcast, because I think you had a great year last year, and obviously leading the championship this year. Yeah. So that speaks for itself. But for me, Pramac Yamaha should be handing you a contract to sign for next year. But let's see. Let's see what happens.
It's a good team, and also I think it's a good project, because they are now improving a lot in the last races and in the last test. And I think for me, I think I'm a good rider, no, and a rider that I can make...
bring a lot to that project, yeah.
I can make a good results with the Yamaha, and also with the factory riders, making a good bike.
Yeah. Let's see what happens. Let's hope for some good news. Maybe not next year, or the year after. But anyway, for now, I hope you have a strong race weekend in Silverstone, and better luck than you've had here in the past. And all the best for the rest of the season. And I'll be cheering you on.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks, Sergio.
Thank you so much.
Here with Tony Arbolino, Elfmark VDS Moto2 rider. Tony, very warm welcome onto Motopod. I'm guessing this is probably the first time we spoke on Motopod with Mr. Arbolino. It's a real pleasure to have you with us, and thank you for spending some time with us. So I was looking back across the season so far, and I'm rather glad to be talking to you here in Silverstone, because you're coming from a very promising couple of rounds in Sachsenring and in Assen. You were sixth in Assen and ninth in Sachsenring, but with the fastest lap. So, been a challenging year overall, I guess, but tell us about it in particular. Can you tell us about the transition from the Dunlops to the Pirellis? Has that been a tricky thing to manage so far, and it looks like some progress is being made there?
Yeah, honestly, it was a big change. I have to say that, we are get used to change a lot of things on the bikes when you're training, also while you train, so... But I need to say that in the top level, these changes change many things. Mm-hmm. So we had to be a bit smart on the type of work, to don't go crazy, to change that much that makes a better bike on this tire.
Yeah.
So looks like it's more to leave something that more or less you like and go and try to work and try to squeeze the maximum of the tire. It's a tire that let you do many, many things. And
do you like the tire compared to the Dunlop?
Yes, sir. I like much, but I don't show my maximum level. I'm pretty confident that my level is much higher than that. But yeah, we have. We've been a couple rounds that we show a lot the speed when we decide to make the best our best bike that I feel on my end. and then leave the setting and leave the setup and leave the things and try to just polish.
Not get lost in too many changes.
Not get lost because the tire gives you a lot. So
yeah.
It's difficult to feel, to make the perfect things.
I mean, I was going to ask you, as a very experienced rider in the Moto2 category, but overall in your career, are there some specific particular bike setup changes that you've needed to make, maybe with the Kallax chassis, in order to make the Pirellis work? Because my understanding is that you have more feel, possibly more edge grip with the Pirellis. So have you had to... you've just explained that you're trying not to go too crazy in too many different directions, but has there been some particular changes to the setup of the bike to make the Pirellis work better?
Yes, sir, mate. Honestly, the Pirelli gives you a lot in straight braking, lean... tipping brake, the exit with the angle, the edge creep. I mean, everything, you have more with this tire. And I really like, honestly.
Because you have a very particular extreme leaning angle on the bike, don't you? So has it been difficult to find the limit of the tire on the edge? Or?
No, it's just that in the top level, in the World Championship, if you just miss just one small thing, you are not fighting for the podiums.
Yeah.
And that's because many other people have... fine. So maybe if you just go a bit lost, you are not fighting for the victories and the podium. So that's what we decided to do, to leave our best option that we find during this year and then try to squeeze the maximum. But the tire gives you a lot. And the only thing is the drop of the tire, the grip level. If you don't manage really well with your style, also a bit with the bike, you need to go on that direction, then you will lose the race in the last 4 or 5 laps.
Yeah.
So yeah, you need to also try to manage a bit more. Yeah.
I was talking with Sam Lowes at Donington Park a couple of weeks ago at the World Superbike round there. And I know you and Sam, I think, are quite good friends with each other.
Yeah.
During your 2 years together in this team, obviously you developed that relationship. So have you had, since this year with the Pirellis, which of course Sam is riding the more or less the same tire, he told me, in the World Superbike.
Okay. Same one.
The World Superbike is a very different machine, but have you had some interactions with him to try and also unlock some of the knowledge around this area?
Yeah, honestly, it's been twice in our calendar. It's been twice in, I remember it was Barcelona and Mugello, maybe, I don't remember. And I was talking to him and he saw some potential on me on the tire, but was not able to really squeeze. But we talk about the tire, we talk about the style of riding, what let you do the bike and the feeling. And when you talk with someone that already try, maybe unlock you some feeling on your head that then you go and you do it on the bike and then you realize it's possible. So yeah, it was important to talk to him. I mean, I talk as a friend because I have an extremely good relationship with him. So I think it's quite nice to talk with an experienced guy like him and many pole position victory, so it's important.
Now, Tony, where does Silverstone as a track, as a circuit, where does it rank for you on the list of favourite Tony Arbolino tracks on the calendar? Because, well, and how are you feeling about the weekend ahead, bearing in mind you've just had 4 weeks to relax a little bit, think about the first 9 races. We still have 11 races to go this season, so a long championship still ahead. How are you feeling ahead of this weekend and Silverstone in particular?
Yeah, should be top 6 because it's a really big track. Really flowing track, really, really such a good racetrack. I think many overtake points, so I think we'll be top 5, top 6 in the racetrack of the calendar. So, yeah, I mean, I've been fast, more or less, let's say, in Moto3. So I make podium, pole position. I had the track record, so I mean, it's something that is really, but in Moto2 was not really my best, best racetrack in the calendar. But yeah, we made a last year test with a really quite lap time in Monday after the race last year, 23, so change tire and everything. But I think we understand a bit the direction, and this year is the time to give my best, my best version. I want to show the best version of myself and take the best result in Moto2 this year. Yeah.
And as I mentioned, you moved to the Elfmark VDS team in 2022, so you've not been here so long, but tell us a little bit about the team, your relationship in the team and maybe with the team owner, Mark van der Straaten, who's a very big character, I understand. I haven't met him, but what's the dynamic? Is it like a family for you now here?
I mean, I feel like now with the people, I feel like I'm at home. Like I know everyone, I know everyone's face, I know everyone feeling, I know all the relationship is like, for me, is like to go at home. So yeah, it's extremely important to be here and to have such a good relationship with Mark also. Van der Straaten is important for me also. And I think it's such a good people. I hope I can win with this team.
Yeah, and just to sort of start to wind up a little bit, you've been riding in GP since 2017. Before that, you had 3 years, I think, in CEV Moto3, yeah. Junior World Championship. And yet you're still only 23 years old. It doesn't seem possible to have such a long career and only be 23. But what are your thoughts and ambitions, or maybe even some firm plans for next year and, you know, moving ahead?
Yeah, it will be crazy for me to make some good things. I mean, I don't know, nothing confirmed yet. So I'm keep pushing. I think I want to show here in Silverstone and next, let's say, two races my real potential with this package.
Yeah.
Yeah, this will be my goal. Then we will see. But yeah, will be a great important thing. Some door will open. Yeah.
Yeah. Any particular rounds coming up on the final 11 races? Anything that's, you know, you look particularly looking forward to in terms of feeling at the track? Or you have two races, I think, now in Misano to look forward to.
Yeah. I mean, it's important that we increase the level in the last couple of races. We saw that and we checked that and we saw that was really a big step. So just my goal is to keep increase this step and keep increase my level. Was 4 weeks for me that I also work a lot on myself, so to improve my technique.
What do you do in the 4 week summer break? It's not as long as previous years, I think.
Yeah.
But is it holiday time or training all the time? What does it look like for you?
Yeah, you need to have a bit all the time, like just 3-4 days I had, and a couple of days with my family, then back on training, back on improve my technique, improve my level every single race. But yeah, that's what I try to do, and that's what you need to do. Yeah. Try to work on a tire every time and try to be better.
And
rider.
Do you have a, I don't know, a 600cc bike that you take to a track to do your training, or is it flat track? What is your favorite kind of way
my
to keep
favorite
fit?
Training is just go on the bike, have fun, and try to work on the technique with some road bike, and that's it.
Yeah,
I'm not that rider that likes a lot motocross and so on, but I try to increase my level also with other things.
Yeah, interesting. Well, fascinating and great to talk to you, Tony.
I really appreciate
your time. And
sure.
Yeah, myself and the Motorpod listeners wish you a great Silverstone weekend and a good
Thank
result.
You so much. Thank you.
Thank you.